Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1 with Opel and the Opel Commercial Vehicles range. We have your van.
If a never-ending cycle of locking down and opening up is less than appealing, what does a regime of strict restrictions on foreign travel feel like from the inside? I'm joined on the line now from a hotel room in Shanghai, where he has been for the last 9 days, by Dr. Paul O'Brien, a medical doctor and China trade policy analyst. Good morning, Paul, or good evening, as it is to you. Are you gone a little bit mad or completely mad at this stage?
Somewhere in between those two points, I think, Philip.
And you have another 4 days, is it, after this before you've completed your quarantine period?
Yes, that's correct. So I'll do one more PCR test, and pending the results of that, hopefully negative, then I'll be able to go anywhere I want, really.
Take us through the whole thing. What happened before you even got into China? What hoops did you have to jump through?
First gatekeeper is actually getting a visa to China. At the moment, it's quite difficult. So once you have your visa, the next step is that you have to get a negative result on a PCR test, and that has to be 72 hours before you fly. Once you get that, you send it to the Chinese embassy in Ireland. They verify the result, and then they issue you with a stamp on a health declaration form, and you present that before you check in at the airport in Dublin then.
And who do you get the test from, Paul? Is it a private test, or do you go through the public system via your GP here?
There are two options. Once they're an accredited, they have a particular standard for the labs, an ISO standard. Once the lab has that ISO standard, it's okay in terms of the embassy. So I did the standard enough procedure in that I would have rang my own GP, and he would have given me a referral, and then I did my testing in the Bon Secours in Cork City.
So then you board the plane. Were there many on it, by out of interest?
My flight path would have been Dublin to Heathrow, then Heathrow to Pudong in Shanghai. Both flights were pretty packed. Yeah, I think they would have been close to capacity. I suppose the real checking, kind of the secondary checks, then took place at the Heathrow, from Heathrow to Shanghai.
And what were those checks?
So there's kind of two main checks. The first one is before everyone boards, they do a temperature check, and also at the actual gate for the boarding gate, they have a QR code kind of on the screen in front of the gate. And what you actually do is you have to use one of the Chinese applications. There's two main ones. One is WeChat, and that's by the big company Tencent, and the other one is Alipay, and that's by the big company Alibaba. So once you scan that, it brings you through to an interface which acts as your kind of contact tracing data and your geosync data plus your health passport in China. So you fill that all out, and that generates a QR code, and that will be your QR code for all your time in China to do basically everything going forward from there. They actually have a look at your health declaration, they've checked your temperature, and then they scan that QR code, and then you board the plane.
And when you land in Shanghai, are you swept away to the hotel straight away, or are you allowed to get there under your own steam?
There's a couple of other processes then. So I found this one a strange enough one. When you're on the plane, if you look around, you'll see, I saw about three people in full PPE, which I assumed first were passengers who took the, who were taking the level of safety to a higher extreme, but actually it turns out they're officials. I don't know, is it a random thing or do they fly on all the flights? But once the plane had stopped in Shanghai, all those guys got off and they did the same process again. They scanned all the QR stuff, they looked at the health declaration, and then as everyone was leaving, they actually had some devices to spray ionized hydrogen peroxide to kind of disinfect all the plane as well. Once you get into Shanghai, then, yeah, you're more or less swept off to a kind of special holding area. So because not everyone will be going to Shanghai, they have kind of designated areas for each of the provinces, and you can see them kind of cordoned off into separate areas. Part of the process is they have a secondary kind of health application app for Shanghai, so I had to sign up for that as well. But yeah, once that's all done, the bus came and it took us to our hotel. The bus is it's a really kind of, if they've kind of jerry-rigged the bus to have almost like its own PPE, it would be the way I describe it. It's each section is kind of cordoned off with these large kind of perspex barriers as well, which is pretty pretty interesting.
And then you're shown to your room, which is going to be your home for the next 14 days. Have you tried setting foot outside it? What would happen if you did?
No, I'm kind of afraid, to be honest. One of the things is when you get into the hotel, they set you up with a group kind of on your WeChat app, which is similar to WhatsApp groups. And within that group, they tell you all the different things you need to know. So when your food is ready to get outside, when you're going to do your 12-day PCR test, and any other things, they have actually doctors here, psychologists that look after people who are finding the process hard. And as well as that, there's a requirement that you take your temperature twice a day and give your basic health status over the course of the day. And that is all integrated into that app I was telling you about.
Who pays for all of this, Paul?
So for the hotel, it's my own expense. And they kind of have two tiers of hotels. They have cheaper ones, which run at about, it's 200 RMB, so we'll call it 30 euro. And then the expensive ones, which are either 400 or 500. They'd be more bigger chain hotels like the Wyndham and Hilton and stuff like that. So I'm responsible for basically everything in terms of the paying for the room and the food. PCR test, I actually have to pay for myself as well. But anything else that I get, like they sort out themselves.
The prize here is, I suppose, what they're able to do now in Shanghai. As you look outside of your window, does the city appear to be functioning pretty much normally?
Yeah, I'd love to show you a picture of it. It's life as normal. It's very, very busy. The roads are full. If you look down and, you know, when I was driving here, nobody was wearing masks. There was all 70 and 80-year-old people doing the things that Chinese 70 and 80-year-old people do, which is like dancing in the squares and, you know, playing mahjong. And it seems exactly as I remember it when I left, which was all before this whole pandemic kicked off.
And business, the economy, how is it functioning?
That's one of the high points of all this, is that the Chinese economy, it's had the classic V-shaped recovery, and they're actually going to be in positive GDP growth for Q3 this year. They're after having a remarkable rebound, and that's actually being realized by the big tech companies like Alibaba, who's in e-commerce, and WeChat, who are Tencent, who would also be in e-commerce. And I think you've seen that reflected as well in consumer confidence index and a number of other metrics they use for, you know, gauging economic success.
Have you detected, are you aware of any signs of disquiet, or are most people just happy to get on with what it is that the process, the regime that the government has opted for?
That's the thing. I think the public buy-in here was very, very high at the start, okay? And that was based on the assumption that the deliverables that the government was talking about were going to be met. That being, you know, essentially a very, very high levels of suppression or a zero COVID environment. And because they've been able to deliver that in China, and I suppose because they're able to have the comparison of how things are going in Europe and how things are going in the US as their largest economic competitors, public support for the government has actually spiked considerably, and that's reflecting even in consumer purchasing behaviors, where national products and stuff have all gone up versus their international counterparts over here. So I think the buy-in is great, but people seem very, very happy with their government at the moment. And I think there's independent reports from the likes of McKinsey to support that, rather than it being something the government is saying here.
I'm not going to ask you if it would work over here, but let me ask you instead, did you see anything in the technology that the Chinese are employing to enforce this that we don't have over here?
Capacity differences between Ireland and China, it's one of the reasons I'd be very reticent to kind of hold China up as a model for Ireland to copy. The capacity differences are stark, especially for the kind of digital infrastructure and the kind of development of their digital ecosystem. Prior to all this, you've had, you know, the likes of Alibaba in Hangzhou and Tencent down in Shenzhen. They've absolutely transformed the country to where you can do everything in China with your mobile phone. And when you say that, it's very difficult to give you the level of context you need to understand how well connected this country is by, you know, that ecosystem. So we don't have that in Ireland to kind of piggyback off. So they
and not to put too fine a point on it, Paul, I don't presume that the Chinese government is too worried about digital privacy.
It doesn't exist here. Look, the big thing in China is all the major telecommunication companies like China Unicom, they're all state-owned. The disconnect from can we get this data to is the data available, it's just not there. So their contract tracing efforts, they can kind of superimpose all that existing geosync data from the telecommunication companies onto that. So it just adds something that we don't have, and I think that's very, very significant.
Finally, before I let you go, Paul, you're well connected with the state pharmaceutical company Sinopharm, who's one of the two, I think, vaccines that are now in circulation that are being administered in China. What's been the reaction? Is it effective not just for young, healthy people, but for old people as well?
Yeah, they've done a large cohort, and the cohort in terms of the demographics and stuff would be quite varied, and they've had very, very good results. In terms of old people, I don't know. I think it's at the moment primarily being done in the military, doctors, nurses, etc., that will be at high risk of exposure. And then for high-ranking government officials, in Zhejiang, in a city called Jiaxing, they're doing an open, anybody can sign up to the trial. I don't have the data back yet from that, but there's been, you know, tens of thousands of people taking it of all ages. And just the basic results is that there's been no real major adverse outcomes, and that it appears that once someone is vaccinated, there is no signs of reinfection post-vaccination, which would say that it's an effective vaccine. But that's very difficult to gauge when you actually have no spread of the virus in the community. So I suppose it will wait until the kind of rubber hits the road to find out if the vaccine works. We need another kind of localized outbreak to check what will happen.
Okay, good news, very, very heavily qualified good news, but good news nonetheless. Dr. Paul O'Brien in China, thank you very much.